Good morning. At the outset, I would like to, convey my greetings, and I kindly ask you to bear with me to be not able to be present with you in person due to some other competing engagement. But anyway, I thought I will try to record the presentation and send it through my colleague Santrine. I hope the presentation find some use in the course. But otherwise, I'm sure my colleagues, Dr. Parthabasu and others, should be able to fill in the gap and make things more clear. What I would like to do is to briefly review the natural history and pathology of cervical neoplasia. And as you are all aware, cervical cancer is a very rare long-term outcome of a very common viral infection of the surface epithelium. Its natural history is well understood. Probably this is one of the best cancer models where we understand what happens, how it is caused, and how it progresses, and how its progress can be arrested. And it is eminently preventable and treatable cancer. And it is a cancer of the poor women, has very important socioeconomic determinants. On the one hand, a large amount of the burden of cervical cancer has been prevented in developed countries with organized screening programs. On the other hand, there's a very pessimistic scenario in many developing countries where it can be really prevented to a large extent. It's still a major problem. Since it affects poor women, there is very little advocacy. Fortunately, in the last decade, the Gates Foundation has supported a large number of initiatives to show how cervix cancer can be early detected and prevented. A very simple model for cancer is exposure, which affects the normal cells along with cofactors, leading to the development of cancer precursors, which may progress to invasive cancer. Cervix cancer fits very well with this model. Cervical cancer is caused by persistent infection with one of the high-risk HPV types, one of the 15 types. The most common types causing cervical cancer are HPV 16 and 18. So exposure to HPV infection, persistent infection, leads to integration of the viral DNA into the normal cell DNA, which is now transformed into a clonogenic cancer cell, which proliferates to produce precursor lesions, which, if undetected and untreated in a minority of women, may become invasive cervical cancer. The causal association between HPV infection and cervical cancer has been established in a number of settings, like in case series. I think with modern detection techniques, more than 99% of cervical cancers are shown to contain HPV DNA. And very high risk has been demonstrated in a number of case control studies and prospective studies, which consistently show a risk much higher than 50 or 100 times as compared to non-infected women. So the evidence is very consistent. The mean duration of a new HPV infection is like 8 months. Almost all women are infected with HPV sometime in their life. HPV infection is an infection of the surface epithelium, which can happen in the genital tract or in the alimentary tract or in the skin. And the lifetime risk of infection is around 80%. But fortunately, in more than 80% of the women, the infection disappears by itself within 36 months. Only in about a minority of women, about say around 5 to 15%, the infection persists. And among the women with persistent infection, less than 5% progress to cervical intraepithelial neoplasia. In statistical terms, of the every 10,000 women infected with HPV infection, one woman develops a cervical neoplasia. So as already said, HPV infection of the normal cell leads to integration of the viral DNA, transforming the cell, which leads to dysplasia and cancer. HPV infection happens. The most immediate change is this disturbance in terms of the low grade scums intraepithelial lesion or CIN1 or even mild atypia, there are cellular disturbances. In most people, with the disappearance of the infection, these cellular changes disappear. In a minority of women, the low grade squamous intraepithelial lesions may progress to the high grade squamous intraepithelial lesions or CIN2, or they can progress to CIN3, and then a proportion of CIN3, if untreated, can progress to microinvasive cancer and cancer. Roughly, one would say less than 5% of the CIN1 becomes cancer ultimately over a 15-year period. This may be like 10 to 15% with CIN2 and maybe around 25 to 40% with the CIN3 over a period of 10 to 15 years. It's better to know the terminology because a lot of terminologies are used. You may be surprised. Even the pap smear classes terminology is used in some of the countries like Nordic countries. The WHO system, the formal WHO system, used dysplasia. Currently, the WHO uses the CIN system to denote the different cytological categories. And the Bethesda system is widely used in the United States, Canada, and European countries. But these are interpretable across the different categories as you see in this table. So, essentially, the categorization of cervical intraepithelial neoplasia is based on cellular changes in cytology and histological architecture in the case of histology. In the case of histology, when the disturbances, the dysplastic cells involve lower one-third of the epithelium, it's called CIN1. When it involves middle one-third, it's called CIN2 or high-grade squamous intraepithelial lesion. When it involves the upper third of the epithelium, it's called severe dysplasia or CIN3 or HSIL again. Carcinoma situ is a old terminology which is no longer used. This was specifically used when the atypical cells involve the entire thickness of the epithelium but the basement membrane is intact. Cytologists will classify to different categories of CIN by careful observation of cytological features such as the cytoplasmic changes, the nuclear changes, the cytoplasm nuclear ratios, the size of the cells, etc. How cervical precancerous lesions progress to cancer or how their progress can be arrested has been studied in a number of cross-sectional studies, cohort studies, and screening programs. In fact, the screening programs have contributed greatly to the understanding of natural history of disease, because in screening programs there are women who may choose to get treatment, who may choose not to get treatment, people will get lost to follow up, and they are linked with cancer registries. So linkage with the cancer registry shows which type of women develop cancers. So screening programs have largely contributed, particularly the screening programs in the 1960s and 70s. When a large number of women with CIN 1 and 2 were not treated by treatment policies, allowed the study of the natural history of cervical precancerous lesions. Of course, there are some problems. I mean, the sample sizes are variable and some of them are treated, and there is varying degrees of loss to follow up. There is inconsistencies in diagnosis. Despite all these problems and challenges, these studies have provided very valuable leads for the progression of precancerous lesions. In a classical pooled analysis, Oster showed that around 10% of CIN1 progressed to CIN3 and 1% progressed to cancer, and about 22% of CIN2 progressed to CIN3 and 5% of them progressed to cancer, and about 12% of severe dysplasia progressed to cancer over a 10-year period. Another important natural history study is in the context of the screening program in Toronto, the Ontario Cancer Registry. Linkage has helped quite a lot in addressing the progression of lesions here. So it's a fairly large study with a follow-up over 8 years. And when this study was conducted, the CIN1 mild dysplasia, the CIN2 moderate dysplasia, they were conservatively managed. In this Toronto Natural History study, as you see here, over a 10-year period, about 29% of the mild dysplasias progressed to moderate dysplasia or worse, and about 10% of mild dysplasias progressed to severe dysplasia or worse, and about a third of moderate dysplasias progressed to severe dysplasia or worse, and about 20% of severe dysplasias progressed to cancer. And again, as you see here, this shows the progression of the different dysplasias to cancer, and this is about less than 3% in the case of mild dysplasias, and about 10% in the case of moderate dysplasias, and 20% in the case of severe dysplasias. The factors that influence progression of CIN to cancer include persistent HPV infection, aneuploidy, persistent cytological abnormality, old age, large lesions, and dense acetovoid lesions. So to summarize, more than 80% of CIN 1 and 2 regress by 10 years. About 10% of CIN 1 progress to severe dysplasia or carcinoma in situ. About 20% of CIN 2 progress to carcinoma in situ. About 5% of CIN 1 progress to invasive cancer. 10% of CIN 2 progress to invasive cancer. And one would say, about 50% of CIN3, if left untreated, may progress to invasive cancer over a follow-up period of 10 to 15 years. However, progression is a slow process offering several opportunities for prevention. Now, most people will consider a high-grade CIN, CIN2 and 3, is a true precursor of cervical cancer. So, what are the implications of the natural history of cervical precancer for treatment? Most HPV infection are transitory in nature, so no treatment is required. In fact, no treatment exists for HPV infection. Most CIN1 regress, if systematic follow-up cannot be ensured, treat. Certainly you are over-treating, but no harm. CIN2 and 3 are true precursors of cervical cancer, and one should treat them. The risk of invasive cancer is still high in treated women with CIN, so wherever possible, they should be followed up.